thing. Hey, we're gonna get it started. Just Norma, you take it first, and then Lance, if there's anything you want to add, just tell us why Shark Tank was giving you a call, which is really just another way of asking, what do you do, and why would they have been interested?
Okay, sure. So first of all, what we've done is Lance created a program called Young Entrepreneur Training, YET. And the YET program was designed to be an online program where parents could teach their kids how the necessary skills they need to be entrepreneurs. The program was really successful in that the kids learned very quickly. Lance took a bunch of students through it initially, and they did fantastic. So fantastic that when they went to a trade show, they would make a lot of money, $400 or $500 in an afternoon. And they were really excited, and they were really excited to go shopping, which clearly was not Lance's intention. And so Lance and I had been friends throughout that whole process. And when that came up, we decided to team up and figure out how to make the program better, more effective. And a book was one of the results of that. So together we wrote the book, Money Monster or Money Master, teach your kids the basics of money and have them love every minute. And that's the picture of it there. I think you've seen it on some of your website things.
Mm-hmm.
And in the process of doing that, we really thought about what's the mission? Like, why are we doing this overall? And in our book, we have our book's vision, and it was to inspire people of all ages to become financially aware. Because if we don't know what's happening with our money, most people don't care what happens in the rest of the world. And we want to encourage adults to have an open dialogue with their kids from a young age to create responsibility and conversation. There's lots of things that have come up in Lance's life, dad of six kids, questions about money. I've come up with them my own. I've got three. And then in talking to people, it boils down to money makes the world go round, yet we don't talk about money. We make mistakes with it as the way we learn instead of learning consciously. So that's kind of what our process is, where we started.
Fantastic. Quick question for us. Can you just give a little bit more detail on the financially aware? What does that term mean to either of you? Go ahead and take that, either of you.
Lance?
We find that kids these days, if they want anything, if you ask a young child, what do they want? They'll say, I want one of those plastic carts. Because they think that they see mom and dad buy groceries with it and buy a toy with it and buy gas with it. And everything that they buy these days is based on that cart. And it's even worse now that they have tap. I don't know if you have that in the
state. Yeah, we got it.
So you literally just push the cart against the machine and then you get to take the product away. So kids aren't told that that's based around a bank account and that we have to go earn the money and put the money into the bank account in order for that card to work. And so because we don't make the kids financially aware of that, all they think is they just want one of those cards like mommy and daddy has. And so we really encourage the parents to start talking to their kids about where that actually comes from. And that, you know, sometimes we can't always have everything that we want. And it's not just an endless plastic magic card, and that they need to be aware of how that whole process works. And they don't do it in school very often. The only money they really teach in school is they'll do like mathematics by counting pictures of money, which is okay, but that doesn't really teach them where it comes from or how to get it or how valuable it can actually be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or more importantly, how to make it work for them instead of against them.
And so what I hear from that, and it's actually not something I've thought that much about, which is these days, kids are not even seeing dollar bills. So they're not even seeing the old representation of what are the work that we have put in, because this is an entrepreneurial community. This Fambundance is it's pretty much made up of all entrepreneurs. And one of the things that brings us all together is that many of these entrepreneurial families are seeing that the real opportunities in the world that are gonna exist, especially as the kids get older, are gonna be entrepreneurial type of opportunities versus the old days where there was systems in place that kind of shuffled human beings into kind of workforces, where now that's going away. So this is a community that believes strongly that we need to prepare our kids to have these entrepreneurial mindsets so that they can create opportunities for themselves. And just to go back to what you're saying, this is a key component, because what we're really talking about is what is the actual, like, what does money look like and what is money? So I'd love to hear what you, when you think of what is money, and parents, this is also somewhat of a training. So when you're talking to your kids about money, you're able to say, you know, as an entrepreneur, you offer value to the world, and then the world offers you a currency in exchange, and that currency is money. When you offer value, you get money back. What is money?
And if you think about, you know, like, so I'm 46 years old, and I remember when I was younger, my dad would come home and, you know, hand my mom his paycheck or whatever. So you'd see, oh, dad went to work and he earned a paycheck. And so you take that paycheck and you have to sign it. And then mom has to go down to the bank, or dad goes to the bank, and we give it to the lady and she puts it into the bank, and then you get cash back, and then you go use the cash to buy things. You know, so they see the conversion from the piece of paper to the bills and the change.
Right.
Nowadays, when you talk about money, the kids probably, and I don't know this, I'm just saying this, but they probably don't even realize that when you go to work, you get paid, because your paychecks are usually electronically transferred into your account now. So therefore, there is no paycheck to bring home. There's no going to the bank to do it. Automatically, it's all just done for you. And so they probably wouldn't even associate the job with the plastic card. There's no way of tying the two together anymore. Mm. So because of that, we've made it so our kids are so numb to the financial system that it's even going worse, because they have no clue at all of seeing that whole process of how it actually works.
That makes a lot of sense, because the more you see it, the more you value it. If mom and dad have to sign it, take it down to the bank, exchange it, come back with something, and then distribute that something. Whereas even now, if you take the electronic world, you're just talking about even further, you know, even that, like a Dave Ramsey program, has envelopes in the house where all the cash is, right? So you have these different envelopes. And in the electronic world, you're just kind of moving and transferring electronically to where you don't even see the envelopes, you don't see the money, you don't see anything. It's all literally happening with no explanation. And because it's out of sight, it's out of mind. That's interesting. How would you instruct a parent to help a kid, whether they're 18 years old or they're young? You know, let's just say there's a couple different categories, right? We have teenagers, then we've got kind of middle school kids and elementary school kids. How might you recommend that one of our parents has a conversation with their kids around this kind of process, and for the different ages that are present inside of our community or inside of each of these families?
That'll lead directly into the book. So Norma, you do that one.
Okay, so one of the parts of the book that Lance wrote is a really easy explanation, in my opinion, as to why parents need to do what we suggest. So if you want to teach your kids to ice skate, you can. You can get them videos on it, you can have them try on skates, you can teach them all the rules, you can do all those things about it. And they think they're masters, they got it. They know everything there is to know about hockey and the game of and ice skating. But as soon as you take them to the rink and you strap those skates on and they stand up, they're gonna fall on their butts because they don't have any real life experience. And so the same thing applies to money and cash. You physically need to put cash in their hand in order for you to teach them about money and value and how to divide it and how to think about it. So part of what happens is, in the book, we talk about that. You need to create an opportunity where your kids are receiving cash, good old fashioned dollar bills and coins, so that they can physically talk, and it gives you an opportunity to talk to your kids about the money. So at Lance's home, and this is part of what Lance does with his family, he has what he calls an allowance hour, where I think it's every couple of weeks, Lance, now that your kids are older, he gives them an allowance strictly for the purpose of learning how to divide that money into categories and creating an opportunity to talk to the kids about the subject of money. It's not tied to doing chores, because let's face it, if you're tying your allowance to chores and they don't do the chores, you're in the big hassle of, do you pay them or not? Or if they were sick, do you pay them because you feel bad? Or if they did a crappy job, do you pay them half? Now you're not their parent, you're their boss. Who likes their boss? Not so much. So allowance hour really is strictly for talking about money and physically handling it and seeing how to divide it up into categories so they can learn how to balance. I hope that helps as an example.
Yeah, I think what I hear you're saying is that the way that you're putting it in to the everyday lives, because what we were talking about is how, because there's a credit card in the everyday life of a family now, the presence of cash isn't really, it's not
it
present.
Doesn't exist.
And that you might even, the parents might even get their kids a debit card that they use when they're old enough. And so now they're not even getting an allowance with cash anymore. They're getting the exact electronic thing where they just think it's a card that has, you know, that's magical.
So we call it the magic plastic card for a reason.
The magic plastic card, which makes a lot of sense. Tell me about more about the idea of giving kids money without asking anything in return of them so that they have the ability to manage that money. Tell us more about that.
Do you want to take that, Lance?
We do that because if you distill into them the basics of money management and they can learn that no matter whenever they get money, they manage it, then no matter in their life going down the road, they'll have the categories to cover every aspect of their life. So we have there are two rules to money management for our kids. One is if the money is earned, it has to be managed. If the money is given, then you can choose where to place it. So similar to the envelopes you spoke about, we use jars with the kids. And we'll say, was the money earned? Yes, then we manage it according to the program, the system that we use. If the kids are given the money for, say, birthday or, you know, Christmas, that kind of thing, then the children have the right to choose where they want to put it. But once they put it into that category, they cannot then turn around and remove it back out. So they have to choose wisely. And there is one jar that we have that's called the wealth jar. And I always say to the kids, if it is your choice to put the money into the wealth jar or a portion of it, then I will match whatever you choose to put in. So if the kids are given, say, $20 and they choose to put 10 into the wealth jar, then I will give them another 10 to match what they put in there. It's no different than your employer matching your, say, in Canada, we have RSP contributions, but they're down there, I think it's like 401ks or something. So if your employer is going to match what you put in, then I do the same thing with the kids to encourage them to see how important and valuable the wealth jar can be in their lives down the road. And once they have their categories, then everything in your life can fit into one of those categories. And you no longer feel guilty about spending that money on something because you specifically have saved it for that purpose. So dividing the money up and having the kids actually have the physical money is a huge, huge learning curve for it all. And I'll even give the kids, they'll say, I need $2.80, and I'll give them $2.90 and see whether they say, oh, you gave me too much. Or I'll say, sorry, I don't have the correct change. You're going to have to make change. And so they'll go into their jar and they'll have to make change to give it back to me. So it teaches them money skills as well with the mathematics.
Mm. I'm actually going to stop for a minute, and there's a handful of moms on the line, and I'd love to just open it up and see if any of the Lindsays or anyone else has any questions that they would like to ask of Norma and Lance. I know they've
just
got kids.
Just put the pressure on them.
I have a question, Jer.
Please.
So we used to do the all cash system, but what I kind of ran into is forgetting to have cash on myself at allowance time, so then the consistency was off. Is there an age where you think it's okay to move to like a more electronic system? Because that's what we've done now, and like our 6-year-old still doesn't really get it, but our 10-year-old, he gets it.
Okay, so when my son started working and he had his job, he would get direct deposit for his paycheck. And so what he did is he actually opened up different bank accounts. And then when his money was deposited into his main account, he would then go in and eat a transfer in between the accounts.
Okay.
So, yeah, say, for example, he had an education purchase that he wanted to buy.
That's okay. I was just going to say, we use this app and it's called FamZoo, and in there it kind of has different buckets that you can put the money in. Okay. So we have a family meeting every weekend, and that's kind of like our allowance hour, I guess. And we go over their P&L for the week and, you know, where their allowance went into these different buckets and if they had any other income for, but I love your idea of, was it earned? And if it's earned, it needs to go in those buckets. And if it was given, then you get to choose. We don't do that, so I'm definitely going to take that one home.
Well, and on that note, go ahead, Norma, go ahead.
I was gonna say, Lindsay, we chatted last year about the FamZoo app, or I think that's what you called it. I looked into it. It's actually in our book for families that prefer to do it that way. But your question was, at what point do you stop doing cash and start doing electronics? And mm-hmm. you actually answered it yourself quite beautifully. You said for your 10-year-old, he gets it. And for your 5-year-old, not yet. And so for families that are still trying to figure out when, as long as cash is, until kids understand the division of cash, I would recommend you use cash for a while. And everyone's going to be different according to what their kids do, but tangible things help teach tangible lessons. Like, some people are visual learners, kinesthetic. Everybody gets handling money. And part of the reason that we use jars instead of envelopes is it's also a visual thing to see your money growing or declining according to what you're spending it on. And kids get pretty excited when they see cash going up. I know, quite frankly, I still do. What can I tell you? I still have a little cash jar sticking around the house here. So it really depends on the parents, but tangible action tends to cement a lesson.
Okay. And what would your suggestion be for the actual carrying around of money? Because the other problem we ran into with cash is that we would go to the store and they didn't have their cash with them. It was at home in the jar and they didn't know how much was in there.
So we've addressed that in the book as well, because that's a reality, is what do you do? And so what we've said is, if you're out and about and your child says, you know, I want to buy that Lego set, or I want to buy whatever, you can buy it for them. And on the receipt, you mark which kid and how much, whether they're buying on debit, which we call it a debit card, means they have to have the money at home. So when they get home, that package stays with you until they take their money out of their jar. And if it was a credit purchase, meaning they didn't have enough, it goes back in that jar and they don't get any money until it's paid off. So
they might have to wait till the next allowance hour to then accumulate enough money to even have purchased it. So it may be sitting on your kitchen table for 2 weeks until the next allowance, but they can't, because they can't afford it yet. So they've pre-bought.
Oh, okay. I like that.
But it's a good way too, like having that visual of the item that you want. No longer is it in the store. It's actually sitting on your kitchen table, but I can't touch it because I didn't have enough money to buy it yet. And so at a younger age, it's really, really important to get them to understand that, because as soon as they hit in Canada's 19, so I think maybe 21 or 18 down there, you can start getting a credit card and then you can get things without paying for them.
Yeah.
Right now, and then all of a sudden you get a credit card that's racked up. I think your first limit's like $1,000, and then you realize now I have to pay it back. So having that instant gratification these days is just, it's so costly, and people just don't realize it until they've made the mistake, like Norma said, and then we learn from that mistake. But we don't have to do it that way.
Yeah, even if we continue using the app, like I could let Ember buy what she wants, but say, oh, you didn't have enough money for that, so now it's a credit and it has to sit here until, you know, your allowance comes in again.
And there's no reason why you can't even, say, you now it's on credit, and when you borrow the money to purchase it, so now it costs you an extra 20 cents. So now they have to pay a little bit more for it because they borrowed your money. And so next time, you're going to be way more aware of whether they have that amount of money in the account or not. And Lindsay, my question for you is, on that app that you use, can you not see the balance of it at any time?
You can see the balance at any time. So if we're actually in the store, if you want something,
you say, then check your bank account.
You don't have enough money for that.
Yes.
And I can show her the actual balance in her account.
Yeah. So, okay. I'd like to tell you another quick little story here that will really play into this is one of our children, Nick, he really wanted to buy Lego. So he was doing a saving to spend, and he knew which set of Lego he wanted. So we decided one allowance hour to talk about sales. And so we said, you know, each time you want to buy something at a different store, it could be on sale. So now whenever we go into the store, he would disappear off to the toy section, which we thought was completely normal, no big deal, but he would return really quickly rather than us having to go and drag him out of there. And so one day I followed him and I realized what he was doing was every store we went into, he would run to go see if that Lego that he wanted was on sale at that store. And so I asked him, what are you doing? And he said, well, you said that I might be able to buy it sooner if I can find it on sale at a store. So I'm making a note of which store has the Lego cheapest so that when I do have enough money in my jar, I know which store to go to. So that was one really cool thing that he did. And the second thing he did was he had enough money to buy the Lego. And then he said, okay, I want to go to the store and this is the store I want to go to. But I knew that since there was tax on the item, that tonight's allowance hour was going to be discussing tax. And Nick said, well, tax sucks. And I said, well, we all think the same thing. But unfortunately, there is a purpose for it. And so we explained all of that. But then he said, okay, well, can I have a chore around the house that I can get paid for? And so I gave him a chore, we negotiated a price. And then when he did the job, I gave him the money and he said, okay, now we can go to the store because I have enough money for tax. And I said, well, was that money earned or was that money given? And he said, that money was earned. And I said, well, what do we do with earned money? And he said, we manage it, which means I still don't have enough money then. So he walked away deflated, and I could have easily given him the difference to go and buy the Lego because I saw that he'd made the effort, but I wouldn't have been teaching him the correct lesson if I'd done that. So I let it go. And then shortly later, he came back to me and he said, okay, I have enough money for the Lego and the tax now. And I said, well, you didn't do another job, so where did you come up with the money from? And he said, you told me that if I can take money out of my play jar and spend it on anything that I want to, and I choose to spend my play money on tax. And I was like, man, this kid just beat the system. And I have to let him because he's right. He's completely right. He used all the rules and he did it correctly. So we went to the store and bought him his Lego.
Looking for the loopholes. That would be our 10-year-old.
He was 8 years old at the time and he taught me something. And that was just amazing. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
So it might help. Sorry, Lindsay.
That was a great story.
Oh, thank you. I thought it might help if we mention the jars that we recommend that parents use. And clearly, as parents, you get to do whatever you want. But we have something called a save to spend jar, and that's for a bigger item. So it might be the Lego in Nick's case, or a bike, or a car as a teenager gets to be older. We have an education jar, and we don't expect our kids to go on to higher education. Those that want to can. That's not what the jar is for. It's about perpetual learning. So it could be used for a kid that wants to learn how to go to an art class. That's an education. Or to play better hockey or ballet lessons. So education isn't just about school and college and university. It's about perpetual learning, personal development, whatever it is. The play jar is almost always the kid's favorite. As the kids have gotten older that Lance has taught, we have conversations about them, and they're in our book as well. They talk about the different jars and what they like. But the play jar, as Lance said, is you can spend it on anything that makes you happy. Nick's case, it was tax, which I still laugh about. A gift jar, because giving back is a big part of life. We believe in abundance. The more you have, the more you give, the more you get back in life that you can keep sharing on. And the wealth jar. And the wealth jar for us is long-term thinking. We want our kids to learn to have their money work for them. In our book, we talk about the kids being able to use money from their wealth jar to start a business or to invest in something. And the lessons that go along with, if you use your money from the wealth jar and business doesn't go well, we talk about how to manage those expectations and how to take the lesson and not just think it was a loss. And then the last jar, and we don't expect our kids to contribute to it until they're around 16, the necessities of life. And unfortunately, we all know what those are, right? Rent, groceries, bills, cell phones, that kind of thing. But we have those categories because we think they're important in life. Parents can choose whatever they like.
I have a couple of questions.
Sure.
And one is, and you might have already said it, and I just want to be really clear on it for all of our families, because many people are going to be listening to this video chat via audio. So I want to make sure that they don't miss this. Tell everyone how you give money during this allowance hour. What are the different ways in which a mom and a dad can give money to a child? One of them is some sort of a trade of value. And one of them is a unique way, which is you're giving them money to manage. How do you determine how much and at what frequency do you give them the money without anything in return, to where you're not their boss, but you're giving them the tools, their own money, so that they can have their own experience, back to the ice skating metaphor, like analogy, where it's you can do all the preparation, but if you don't get on the ice and realize what that's like, you might not be a great ice skater. So tell us a little bit about how you deliver the money to your kids.
Lance, do you want to take that one?
Okay, so what we do is our kids get paid an allowance based on their age. So on their birthday, they get a raise. So everybody knows exactly how much they're going to get. So if they're 12, they get $12. If they're 15, they get $15. And on a birthday, they go up by a dollar.
Per week?
We do it every other week. So we do it by
week. Every other week.
Yeah. And I recommend when in your household, you do what works best for you. I strongly suggest at least twice a month, because when it's only once a month, it doesn't distill in the mess quickly. And so lots of times I've heard parents will do it based around what their pay periods are. So if they get paid every other week. So when you do it that way, when you do it every biweekly, you actually get two extra paychecks. So the kids would get that as well. And then I actually save all of the change in my pocket because I do use cash. So I will put, at the end of the day, I take the change out of my pocket and I put it into a jar. And then when allowance hour comes, I come and bring that jar. And my jar is, you know, way, way taller. And I put it on the table. And then the kids say, okay, I need, they lay their jars out in front of them and they know what the percentages are. And so then they do the math and they say, okay, I need $3.80 and I need $4.10. And then I will give them that. And then they have to set it in front of their jars and add it all up to make sure it's correct. And then once it's all correct, then they put it into their jars. If they don't do it that way, I've had it before where the kids take the money, put it into their jar, and then they've messed up their calculations. And by that time, it's mixed into the jar and it's too late to go back and correct it. So they always put the money in front. Once it's all divided up equally and it all works out properly, then they're allowed to put it inside their jars.
The allowance hour also has rules. And one of the rules at your house, Lance, is you set the time for allowance hour. Everyone knows what the time is in advance. And if a kid doesn't come, they don't get paid. So we have a video on our Facebook page not too long ago. Nicholas just didn't want to get up and come to allowance hour. He'd rather play video. So Lance went fine. He was a little bummed out to find out he missed out on his $11 or $12 that week. He came to the next week's allowance hour. He was a lesson learned, so to speak. So that's one of the other rules, is you have to come in order to get the allowance. At the allowance hour itself, you bring up topics about money. So that's when you brought up the, you can buy things on sale, what tax is, whatever money questions come up. It gives the kids a chance to ask questions. They might even say, well, how much do you earn? Or what is an investment? Or what does this terminology mean? And if you can't think of it, if your kids don't have questions, we have a list of questions or topics that you can bring up for your kids. So for instance, many kids on the call wouldn't understand the term a P&L sheet. Clearly, you know, Lindsay and Mike, that's their language, that's normal. But as other kids are coming to the program, different topics all the time. I wanted to share a story, if it's okay with you guys, about an older student, or a young man actually. He came from a fairly good background. His parents are both reasonably wealthy, they're entrepreneurial, they've got good money skills. And just recently, the mom learned that the kid had a totally wrong, I guess is the best way word to explain it, understanding of how his credit card worked. And it's only because they never had conversations. They just made the presumption that the kid would know because everyone knows, because that's your language. And so what happened is he had a credit card. It was $5,000 limit, something like that. And one day his mom said to him, so how are you doing with your credit card anyways? You know, you've been on your own for a couple of years, whatever. And he goes, oh, it's great. He goes, and she said, well, can I ask you what the limit is? And he's like, sure, it's $5,000. She said, great. And so what's your current, how much do you currently owe on it? And it was like $49.80. Like it was right up at the axe. And she goes, are you not paying it off every month? He goes, no, why would I? As long as I make the minimum payment, they don't charge me any interest. She almost had a heart attack because that's what he thought, because that's what someone else had told him and no one had ever had the conversation. So he never really paid attention. He just thought as long as he made a minimum payment and kept it under $5,000, there was no interest. He'd never really looked at a credit card statement and understood how it worked. And he came from a good background. The whole idea about allowance hour is to open up conversations.
And I'd love to take this time. I made a little note here that one of our missions inside of the FamBundance community is to equip our young kids and our teenage kids with the tools and the network and the mindsets to be able to carry the legacy of their family forward. And what you're talking about is actually like a kid could come from a really great family that has a legacy to be brought forward. And if that actual habit isn't caught soon enough, it's one of the reasons why we don't really have legacies in the United States. We don't have generation after generation after generation. We have a generation, and then it falls away. Three. And it's because three generations until it's all gone. So this is also a chance to just be very clear with our FAM abundance community. And if you're from the Go Abundance community, and you have this call, this audio, and you're listening to it, or maybe you're watching the video, hey, nice to see you. That one of our main goals is to make sure that your kids and their kids and their kids don't lose everything that you've worked so hard to provide for your family. And that's why we have Norma and Lance on here. And even though we're going over some what seems to be basic stuff, that without these types of sequences, without these types of experiences, that the probability of your kids losing your money or their kids losing your money is much higher. So these are fundamental things that our society has completely lost, and then our schools have done a really poor job of teaching our kids. And that's just not schools, that's also many colleges, because colleges have a lot of, they are a business too. And college works for a lot of humans in order to move forward. And it's a great step for the right person, but they're not teaching us the specific skills that we need in our public schools and in many schools so that we even know what college is and what type of an investment it is. So right now, one of the biggest spots in the United States where we have the most debt is in college loans. So I'd love for you to potentially just take a minute or so and say, you know, if that's our largest form of debt, then these kids who are coming from this FAM abundance community and moving from the school system, whatever, whether it's a private school, an entrepreneurial school, a public school, but they're potentially looking at college. Do you have any insight on questions that they might want to ask about how to assess the investment that college is?
I'll take that one for now, Lance, if that's okay. So I'm really blessed right now. I have a brilliant sister who has a great university degree. I think she's got two of them, quite frankly. And she just said to me a couple weeks ago, she's going back to get her master's. And as an entrepreneur, and she's somewhat entrepreneurial as well, I just about fell off my living room sofa. It's like, are you serious? You're going to go back and spend how much? There's another 75 to 100 grand for 2 years of school to get her master's. And so that was basically the question I asked her, like, why? And she said, well, I looked at it logically. So for her, it's 100 grand to go back for 2 more years. She loves working, so she doesn't have to anymore either. She's got enough investment property not to. She said, but I really love learning. And so that's part of it. It's that inner growth. She loves working at her job. And she said, if I go back to school for 2 more years, my income will double within 3 years. And I intend to work for another 10. So mathematically, it's a good investment. Most people go to school, it'll cost them, and I'm not going to talk American numbers because I don't really know, but $20,000 a year is not unrealistic to pay for basic tuition and costs to go to school. In Canada, a four-year degree, it's $80,000. People don't even think about the fact that $80,000 is cash out of pocket, and then you're going to pay interest on it. But they forget that that's 4 years of lost income earning opportunity.
Right.
So it's not $20,000 a year. They're probably losing closer to $50,000 or $60,000 a year when they think about they're not earning a living during that time period. So only go to school if you know what you want to do and it's necessary to have those skills to do it. My opinion, and Lance, yours is probably the same, is better off to go mentor or work for free for someone. Get involved, learn the skills. Most of our most successful entrepreneurs that we know of and we talk about, they didn't even finish school. And so school isn't the only option. It's only one of the steps depending what you want to do. I want a heart surgeon that's been to school. I really don't care if my local businessman has gone to school, if he doesn't need to, if he can learn through others, and that's the way to go. School is an expensive way to spend 4 years of your time if you don't need it. Go do something useful. That's just me.
I appreciate the explanation, and I want to be clear with someone who's listening to this call who might be thinking, well, we believe in college. We really believe in college. And this is not in any way a right or a wrong conversation. No. This is really just whether we're getting into a relationship and we're going to marry someone, or we're going to go buy a house, or we're going to buy an investment property, or we're going to let go of a bad relationship, or we're going to decide what we want to do, that there's a sequence and there's a series of steps that if we take, it sets us up to win. And what we're just talking about is not going to college to try things out or to try and figure out what you want to be, but that college is really a young person's first step to making the biggest investment that they'll potentially make in their life. And it needs to be taken seriously so that they don't end up in a place where their freedom is taken away by debt. Because once they have debt, it takes away from the time that your kids potentially in the future will be able to invest in figuring out who they are so they can align their talents and strengths with a job that fills them up, that also offers value to the world, and then the money just flows. So getting, whether it's college or anything that is a poor investment, that's where we lose our ability to really go explore what it is that we can be in this world and what can fill us up when we are tied to something because we've made a bad decision and now we have too much debt to move away from. And I just want to be clear, that's a big reason why we're going down this line, is because we started the call talking about some of the younger kids, some of the things with allowances and jars, and what age with cash and what age with plastic. And as the kids grow up, they're going to be faced with bigger and more, they're going to be faced with decisions that have much larger consequences.
And so longer timelines.
And longer timelines. So it's, our goal is to just to take this financial literacy pillar and give it the attention that it really deserves, because when we look at our ability to control our health and we look at the ability to make the contributions and to build relationships, if we're stressed out or we're in a position that we don't want to be because we made bad decisions financially, it's really a first domino to being able to keep ourselves free as we move forward. And again, protect your legacy. So Lance, did you have anything to add to Norma's thoughts on the investment of higher education?
So Norma and I also feel the same way, that we don't necessarily believe that there's such a thing as a bad investment. You can lose money, but you never lose the lesson. And so one of the things that we do is, even with the kids with the wealth jar, if they take the money out in order to go and invest it into something and they don't end up, let's say they decide they want to do a lemonade stand that day. So they take out $20 to buy the lemonade, and then they walk over to the edge of the street and they spill the jug of lemonade. So now they've lost all of their money and they have no way of making it back. So we say to them, when you earn money from that, you always have to put that money back first, and then you manage what's remaining from there. In this case here, if they've lost money, then we ask them to write down what the lesson was they learned on why they lost that money, and then they replace that rather than the money back into their wealth jar. So the next time that they go to make another investment, they have to read all of the mistakes they've made in the past and think, is this new venture going to fall into any of those categories? And if it is, you're going to think really hard about whether you want to do it or not. And if it doesn't, then it might be worth investing into. And so even school is the same sort of thing. You might go to school to become a chiropractor and then 2 years into it realize that you don't like touching people. And so that's not necessarily a bad investment, because you learned something about that. But unfortunately, it's a costly lesson. And Norma and I both in our lives have had some very expensive lessons learned. But we appreciate that, because we know we'll never make that mistake again.
Well, I love the idea of the chiropractor example, because it goes back to how Norma had talked about. One of the best ways to figure that out is not to make the investment. It's actually to make the time to have the experience to get close to the chiropractor who's running the business, so that you can ask some questions and maybe put your hands on some people for free.
Right.
And then go, oh, I don't actually like this. Going to go in a different direction. And right. The investment of time and energy and resources. Yeah, is crucial right there in those two different scenarios. One potentially takes a week or a month, and the other one takes 2 years, and one costs nothing and one costs a lot. So
I own an electrical contracting company, and there are some people who can do what's called a pre-app program and then go to school for a year and a half, and when they come out, they're classified as a second year apprentice. But they could go through all of that and then get out into the field and realize that they absolutely hate this. It would have been way easier to say, hey, I'm thinking about becoming an electrician. Can I come work with you guys for free for a week? They come work for a week and then they're like, I hate that. I do not want to do that. And they save themselves a year and a half of wasted time.
Yep.
So jump into it, see if someone's willing to let you just do it for free, just to walk around and watch and learn a bit. And then you can save yourself a ton of money and a ton of time of your life wasted if you do it that way.
I couldn't agree more. It's when I think of how I've learned all of my most valuable lessons, it's all through experience. And the more strategic I've gotten, the more I've made those experiences more rapid and less costly so that I'm able to pivot from them as quickly as possible, take the learning and move forward. There's a stat here that I thought was interesting. And I think that the stat itself, and I know we've only got a handful more minutes here, the stat itself speaks to why your book is so important. And the stat is that 71% of high school students felt time should be spent teaching personal finance in school, which means that your kids are not getting, unless they're in a special school, they might not be taught anything about money. So I really want to just appreciate on both of you for doing the work that you do, because it's so important for our youth to be educated on this, what we call a pillar, and what the world might call a value, around just having a financial awareness of what's really going on. So again, 71% of kids are saying that they'd rather have more conversations. Now, what are some strategic tips that you have for the parents who are listening to this, who go, I love the jar idea. I love like the money, credit card versus money thing, but my kids are 13 and they don't listen to anything that I have to say right now. So, and they might think that that jar thing is like a baby game.
Okay.
Like, how do you handle that group?
The easiest thing for that is stop giving them money. If you take away their source and they have to figure out how to get it on their own, all of a sudden they won't think it's so stupid anymore.
Every day you're giving your kids money. So whether you're giving it to them for their skating lessons or for their school fees or to go out with their friends or gas for their car, if you look at the amount of money that you're taking out of your pocket every day for your kids that you're supplying them with, count that up, make that part of allowance hour. So if you're regularly giving out your kids $150 a week, you know, for school lunches, supplies, whatever it is, decide that's going to be your allowance and bring that into the conversation. This is how much money you have. This is the things it's got to go towards. If you don't want to come to the table, that's okay. For me, it's an awful lot like kids that won't eat certain foods. When they're hungry enough, they'll eat anything. When they're broke enough, they'll come to the table and talk about money, no problem. Mm. So you cut off their source, as Lance says, and they'll come to the table. And if you try to tie it to jobs or to marks or to whatever, then it becomes a battle. But if you tie money simply to, you come, you get the money divided up, we have a conversation about money, let the kids bring up the topic if they want to, how expensive things are, that kind of thing, it'll start to evolve. Sex and money are two things that parents don't openly talk to their kids about. What are the two things in the world that make the world go round? Sex and money. Sex is more common now in school. Money still isn't. So you got to start at home.
Mm. It's very, very well said. Very well said. Now, let's say that this call has somehow found its way into one of our NGL's hands, which is our next gen leaders. These are the kids between roughly 12 and 18 who are part of our Fan Abundance community, who are emerging leaders in the world. Their next step is to become, you know, their own, away from their family, to start to step into their own. You know, they're listening to this call and they're thinking, how do I approach my mom and dad about this in a really clever way that will help them to move forward in the way that they want to have an experience with money? Like, what are some tips, some strategies, some ideas that you might have for the teenager who's listening to this?
I think every parent's dream is to have a child come forward and say, let me make mistakes with money. All the money that you give to me, if you want to start with a portion of it, I'd like to take some control on it. We'll meet every week and I'll share with you what I'm spending it on. And if I run out and I can't go to the movies this Thursday with my friends, I promise I won't complain because I'll have learned the lesson that I need to manage it more. And here, Mom and Dad, here's a great book that'll help us start to talk. Mm. It's available on Amazon. It's available through our website. I would be excited to find out my kid was more interested in money, that I didn't have to bring up the subject, quite frankly. I'm pretty sure all of your parents would be excited about it.
I think if one of your children came to you and said, hey, mom or dad, I want to start limiting the amount of
We've got a connection that's not working.
Oh, yeah. It's Lance, just, I think it's just, I think it's just Lance who's frozen.
Yeah, Lance is frozen.
But he's going to come back right now.
Maybe.
I mean, right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. It's interesting. As you've answered the question, I realized that my question wasn't really, really, really good, because the biggest, like, just in regards to, yes, the parents are going to be excited. And to all you NGLs out there and teens who don't know that you're an NGL yet, one of the things that I, as I look back over the time period that Norma and Lance have been talking about for us, when I say us, like, I still think of myself as a kid, the time period that they're talking about, especially between like 13 and 18, is there is a something inside of our culture, inside of us, schools, something happens where we become very resistant. I'm talking about teenagers become Absolutely. Very resistant to anything that your parents have to say. And I would actually argue that money makes the world go around, but another thing that makes the world go around is parents. The parents make the whole entire system work, especially for some of the moms on this line who, like, you manage the whole household, you manage the whole ecosystem of the family. So number one, thank you for doing what you do for all these entrepreneurial men. And number two, the NGLs, there's something about being a teenager that makes them not want to listen. And it's interesting because when you think of the best resource they have, it really is their parents. It's being able to talk to their parents and leverage their parents' knowledge and their parents' ability to, and their parents' ability to hand over allowance hour. And so if you're a teen or an NGL listening to this, I would challenge you to think about how can you build a stronger, more efficient, more connected experience and relationship with your mom or your dad so that you have an actual position or a chair at the table to really express some ideas that you have in a mature and responsible way, and to challenge yourself about that. If you're someone who is an NGL or a teenager watching this call, it is potentially the greatest decision you can make is to become friends with your parents and help them be your allies versus your enemy. I wish I could go back and utilize my mom and dad in a much different way, because I would have made it easier on them. And at the same time, my resources would have expanded.
If I can address that real quick, I'm very lucky in my life. I had a set of twins when I was quite young. And then 14 years later, we had our third son. I couldn't teach my twins what we're sharing with people now because I didn't know and understand money. My older boys still struggle with money. My younger son is extremely entrepreneurial. He's had a couple of businesses. He's got some investment properties. And the difference was we have a different dialogue about money than his older brothers and I will ever have. If you can engage your parents early, they are a wealth and a treasure trove of opportunity. The one thing I would say to both parents and your NGL leaders is you need to commit to one another that you'll be honest about the topics of money and not be embarrassed. If your child asks you a question and you don't know the answer, that's awesome. All you have to do is say, I don't know, but together we'll figure it out or we'll find out. It's a learning curve for everyone. And as a teen, for you to bring up topics that you want to know about, your parents will be excited. It'll show that you're growing in maturity and experience, and you'll have more support from them, hence more freedom from your parents as well as you get older. So engage your parents early on the subject. They'll be excited that you did. There's a difference between I want money, I want money, I want money, give, 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 versus I want to learn to be responsible with money. Your parents will be on your side. They'll be pretty impressed.
I love it. Hey, I'm going to make an audio note to Matt Duncan right now. You don't have to unmute, buddy, but just make a note if you're listening that at the time that we are right now, wherever we are in the call, I can't see the timestamp, to make a note that the last roughly 7 minutes. We want to cut that audio and just send that to our NGLs. Just a quick note to the team to cut this, because they won't listen to the whole thing. But if we just give them that last like seven or 10 minute little snippet, they'll be able to listen to that. And it'll at least put that voice inside of their heads that isn't their parents' voice, because their parents certainly can't tell them that, because they already don't want to know what their parents have to think. And it's great to have another voice that isn't mine telling them that. So thank you so much for that explanation of how you just, how you clarified just the, really all your ideas. All your ideas have been, I think of being a kid and I think of what would have happened if I would have been doing this type of stuff. And if I then look at what would I have saved, I probably would have saved like $500,000 in like stupid expenses, including credit card interest and all sorts of nonsense that I didn't need, because I just got into a habit of putting it on a credit card or putting it on something and just being like, I'll figure it out later. And that there was a certain amount of stress that came along with that, that really hurt my ability to evolve. So many things you're talking about, it's not just about carrying the legacy forward and helping kids to have a better experience. So much of this is about helping the kids to grow into who they really are without having such a poor relationship with money that leads to a poor relationship with the self.
I received a phone call from a young lady that lived with us very briefly, 2 or 3 years ago. She came into a large amount of money, over $100,000, and it came in two different checks, one for around 40, the other one is 66. And she called me when she got her $66,000 check. And she said, Norma, I know you and Jeff know more about money than my parents do. She's 24, 25. She said, I'm afraid to cash the check because I don't know what to do with it. And I know it'll just disappear. I said, so Courtney, what'd you do with the first 40? She goes, well, I bought a car like every young person my age does. I said, so what are you worried about the 66? She goes, because I know I don't know what to do with it, that if I just put it into my general account, over time, I'll have nothing to show for it. So as next generation kids, leaders, if you even have that concept of using your money wisely into different categories, when you get an unexpected amount of money, you'll automatically think, where am I going to place it so I can use it to its best advantage? Nothing more empowering in the world than having a choice in how you live your life versus having to go to a job or a situation that you don't want to be in because you don't manage your money. Painful. I see seniors, they're working at Walmart, not because they love it. It's because they don't know any other option. So
yeah,
learn your money yearly, have a choice ahead of you. You can serve more people and have a better life.
Well, I think that this would be like kind of the last question / part of this topic that we'll touch on is we come from a community that has the ability to cover up some of the mistakes. So there's an affluence in the community that allows kids to make mistakes and parents to come in and cover those up because of the amount of wealth that exists. That can be detrimental to the long-term relationship that kids have with money. So there's an interesting balance that has to happen with having a lot of wealth and distributing it to your kids, and at the same time helping your kids to really understand the responsibility of managing that type of asset, managing that type of opportunity. Just, I know you've dealt with all sorts of different communities. Do you see any sort of, do you see anything that you might wanna share with us when it comes to really affluent, wealthy communities and the way that they're educating their kids on finances, and because they have the money that they can cover up mistakes and that maybe the conversation doesn't happen because it's just easier to pay for it instead?
Sadly, I think that's a reality for a lot of people, Jeremy, is that they don't want their kids' mistakes to be made visible. And so they save them. They'll come in and they'll fix something, or they'll buy them a new car, or they'll pay for things that they shouldn't have bought, because it's easier to do that than it is to face the problem. And I think kids need to learn, all of us need to learn from experience and realizing that not having good money skills is okay. That's how we learn, but you have to fall down in order to pick yourself up. So don't always save your kids, but always make sure the lesson is talked about even when you do save them, about what did they learn from the experience and what did you learn from the experience. Saving someone financially is nice in that you don't want them to struggle with bad credit forever. But if they didn't learn the lesson, maybe they shouldn't be saved. Or if they don't even know what the lesson is, maybe they shouldn't be saved. So not to be afraid or embarrassed. When and if your kids make a bad mistake, don't feel like you have to save them. Make sure that you understand and they understand what the problem was before you do. Mistakes happen. It's how we deal with them that matters.
If that makes well sense. Said. Lindsay or anyone else who's on, do you have any final questions for Norma?
I don't have any more questions, Cher.
Great.
I think it was Andrea that is on the call too.
Oh, sorry. It was.
There's another Lindsay.
Sorry, I don't know why. Andrea, I'm so sorry. I thought that the whole time I thought that it was fun that there were two Lindsays, and now it's even better that you're on the call. So, Andrea, do you have any final questions?
Her headphones might not be working.
I was going to say, I can hear little Lindsay in the background. It's easy to get distracted, I remember.
Yes.
It's all good.
Norma, tell us where we can find all the materials that our community might want to use in order to use what you've shared today in their weekly or bi-weekly allowance hours and all the different money management tools that you've shared.
Okay, thank you. So our book is currently available on Amazon. There is a book with a similar title. So if you're looking up for us, look for the monster book it's got the cute green monster and the dollar sign on it, or search for us by author name. That's one way to find it. We have a website called yetacademy.com that leads people to our Yet online training program. And the book is available for sale on there as well. And oftentimes I'm asked how other people can help sort of spread our message. And we're really passionate that we want to get it out to the masses. And so if I can share some ideas on that, and if people are able to help us, please do.
Yeah.
One is clearly you can buy the book. More importantly, put a review on Amazon if you love the book. Let us know if there's things that you want to see changed. Any help with podcasts, webinars, getting on stages. Lance isn't on the call right now. Clearly his internet kind of crapped out. Lance is amazing on stage. I'm okay. He's amazing. He can definitely get the message out. He has spoke on generational wealth to other groups about why it happens and how to prevent it. That or if there's companies that are looking to do some co-branding, our book is available in bulk. Our very first page in it is blank. So if you want to put a message in, one of my goals is to reach the real estate communities, because people are buying houses and you want your clients' kids to be able to buy houses. If you teach them about money and how to manage it early, they'll be buying houses in the future too. So bulk sales are available, and reach out to us. We're happy to do one-on-one calls, whatever it takes. We want to get the message out that money needs to be a topic that's common, not scary.
Awesome. Norma, Lance, I know Lance isn't here anymore, but I'm still going to acknowledge him because he was a big part of this call. The way that you two go back and forth is really wonderful to watch. And the respect that you have for one another is admirable. So thanks for the way that you've shown up on this call for our community. And go check out the book on Amazon. If you have a stage to help Norma and Lance get on, please help them get on any stage, because this, as I'm sure you would agree, is a topic that is important to our up and coming generations of leaders in this world. Thanks again for being here with us, and everyone have an amazing night. I'll see several of you in less than 2 hours on our next call. So thanks for being on this call. I'll see you in a couple hours on the next call. Everyone, Norma, Lance, and you know what? Can you tell everyone the exact name of your book to look for on Amazon? It wasn't clearly said.
It's Money Monster or Money Master? Teach your kids the basics of money and have them love every minute. It's short, easy to read chapters. Somebody called it a bathroom book once. You could read all 44 chapters if you went to the bathroom once a day, kind of thing. And it's meant to be that quick because our attention spans aren't that long. there's lots of downloads available in there and suggestions and things that you can bring up for topics for your kids. We talk about wants versus needs, how to teach your kids that. It's okay to want everything, just not to make sure you can manage your money to have it all. So thank you for that opportunity. Thank you to the ladies and gentlemen that were on the call today. I look forward to hearing more from your community. And if we can help ever, please reach out. That's our goal.
Great. Great, great, great. Awesome.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks, ladies.
Thanks, Norma.
Thanks, guys. Anything else we need? We're good to go.
I think we're good.
All right. Thanks, everybody. All right.